Chapter 7. Mission Time 6147.09, Tango Zulu. Med Bay. Oka Fire Base Main Complex. Zoni sat like an abandoned toy soldier on the edge of the examination platform. Her normal personality still hadn't returned. Honora was busy treating a cut that had gone unnoticed during the chase into the cold and darkness at the north end of the base. Her exosuit was still working properly, even though the helmet had been removed to conserve its oxygen and temperature regulation power. By now the captain was back on his feet, even though he had to be equipped with a fairly sturdy cast to keep his skin medicated and his weakened bones stable. Honora decided against a sling, largely because the Norcon cast was flexible and comfortable enough Hunter could perform some movements and still use his right hand. If the cast's internal sensors detected too much stress to his injuries, it was capable of stiffening automatically to immobilize his arm if necessary. "I hope you're feeling better than me," Hunter said. "At least you have two human arms." Zoni didn't answer. She just stared at the floor. That was enough to get even the doctor's attention. "Commander, are you sure you're okay?" Zoni nodded and took a sudden breath. "Unidentified, man out there. Lost track of him." Back to staring. The captain and doctor glanced at each other. "Did he cause these injuries?" Hunter asked. Zoni shook her head. "Zoni, were you drugged or something?" Hunter asked. "You seem to be having trouble focus." He believed me when I told him I wasn't the enemy. Hunter hesitated for a moment and moved closer to the examination platform to take a seat in one of the metal chairs. "Who? The unidentified man?" Zoni shook her head again. "The Rock. He asked me if I was the enemy and I told him I wasn't and he believed me. That man used his good nature against him. He told the Rock you were the enemy. I had to do something, but I couldn't get there in time and I didn't have any tools." Hunter looked to the doctor once again for help. The problem was fairly simple. Neither he nor Commander Doverly had any idea who the Rock was. During the battle, neither had a chance to communicate with it in any meaningful way. Only Zoni had been there for most of the action. Honora showed the captain Zoni's examination results. Aside from the now properly treated cut, she was perfectly healthy. That at least was good news. Didn't change the fact both of Zoni's friends were still concerned about her. She was still staring at the floor. "He believed me." Chapter 8. Mission Time. 6147.17 Tango Zulu. Security Barracks. Fire Base Main Complex. The Oka Fortress on Mycenae. CD6 wasn't unusual from a military standpoint. It was a forward base, which meant it had to maintain a low profile at sea level. But its staffing and equipment statuses were supposed to be similar to other installations of its type. Everything had been under control before the first attack. As far as Mu was concerned, it should have stayed that way. The problem was, nobody seemed to be left to stand their posts. As the situation deteriorated, the personnel assigned to action stations gradually withdrew until the only Skywatch personnel on the surface seemed to be Hunter and his officers. Among the question marks facing Mu and the strategically minded members of the landing party was the location of the derelict personnel. The outer atmosphere of M-SETI 6 was not hospitable without portable life support. Even with extra packs, exosuits had a limited range. If one assumed the station crew wasn't simply wandering out into the darkness and suffocating, the only alternative explanation was they had a destination in mind when they deserted. What was most concerning was the fact Facility 51 had been left completely unguarded. There was no telling what would have happened if one or more of those experimental weapons had gotten into the hands of the base attackers. There were weapons lockers and munition storage units at various locations around the base. None had regulation guards or sentries. There were fixed weapons along the base perimeter that were neither manned nor guarded. It wasn't because of casualties or personnel just vanishing into the night. There just weren't any men at their posts. It was Commander Tixia who first pointed out to the captain the technicians who reported for damage control at the communication station were less than qualified. They were perfectly competent enlisted fleet personnel, but they didn't have any of the training or equipment they needed to do the job Zony ended up doing for them. Once Mu had gotten Zony out of the cold and back to the medbay after the perimeter breach, Dr. Doverly had launched into an improvised rant about the inexplicable absence of medical personnel. While Zony was being treated, Colonel Moody excused himself for the 60-second trip to the security barracks. The backup he had called for in Dome Blue still hadn't arrived. Surface installations like the Oka Firebase were almost always under the command of a Marine Company grade officer. His or her assignment contemplated at least 3 teams of riflemen for security purposes, among a total of perhaps a couple hundred personnel. They operated in a standard watch rotation keyed to planet rotation like any other surface base. Most were meant to stand watch at various ingress points and sensitive entries. But so far on Oka, Mu had seen a grand total of perhaps 5 armed personnel, and he wasn't entirely certain they were Marines. There were 3 men at the security officer's post when the colonel arrived. 1 or 2 glanced his way and then resumed their activities. It appeared they were searching the office for anything they could salvage. 2 of the men wore standard ground combat gear and were armed with TK-40s. The man seated behind the desk rummaging through a lower drawer wore simple fatigues. Again, Mu was both confused and annoyed. None of them carried themselves like Skywatch Marines. Mu hesitated. His personal alert condition ratcheted up about 4 notches when none of the 3 men acknowledged the fact he had entered the room. Captain? There was a brief pause as somewhere in the back of the ostensible leader's mind, urgent gestures were being passed from partially aware place to partially aware place. Finally, he stood at a semblance of attention. Colonel. Report, Mu ordered. His keen, perceptive instincts were all in full operation. A single spark would have caused the tension in the room to detonate like a satchel charge. Fleet ordered us to abandon the base, sir, the apparent leader replied. We received no such orders, Mu said. He couldn't be sure, but he thought he saw sweat glistening under the man's utility cap. Perhaps you haven't been properly briefed on our communications procedures, sir. I'm fairly sure I was, Captain. I would have done the briefing myself. And you had better advise the man to your right if he touches that trigger again. I'm going to shove that rifle down his throat. Mu's eyes were as sharp as a beetle's wing. Normally, the pause would have lasted long enough for the captain to think twice. When he finally decided to act, all he could do was resign himself to the fact no man should have been able to move as fast as the colonel did. Mu leaped a good 7 feet forward and slammed one of the riflemen into the wall behind his own gun. The TK-40 was ripped out of his gloved hands an instant before its stock rammed into the face of the second gunner. By the time Mu was ready to get answers, the captain had fled. Mu activated his comlink. Clubs to deck. Ship safe. Ship safe. It was a rarely used signal that Captain Hunter himself had invented, not long after being advised there were numerous enemies inside Skywatch itself, gunning for him and his pilots. The first whispered warnings went all the way back to their first mission into Gitiron space. The code he had developed in response was precise and uncompromising. His first priority was to order his senior officers to arm themselves at all times and to make certain Argent security Marines were on the lookout for threats. Ship safe meant everyone other than Argent officers, pilots, and crew were to be considered hostile until further notice. It was a testament to Jason Hunter's famous confidence he hadn't issued the warning the moment they touched down. Hunter was willing to give the base personnel a chance, even though they had already demonstrated an inexplicable lack of concern for the potential of a surprise attack. Mu was less forgiving than his CO. Then again, one man was fleet and the other was a Marine. They were equally capable officers, and each had the achievements to prove it. One was just a little more intense about things, at least as Hunter saw it. In this situation, however, things couldn't have been more obvious. Once again, Argent was being hung out to dry with an apparently well-armed and aggressive fighting force out there somewhere bearing down on her senior officers. It wasn't just the Giants with their ice guns that worried Mu. It was the fact they were one hop from fleet-strength Imperial forces in a system where at least one world burner had recently been detected. The enemy was present on the surface. There could be no reasonable doubt it was also present in space. Fortunately, this time the captain and his unconventional officers had planned ahead.